There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Gene Robinson is a self-absorbed, narcissistic man who has demanded his way or the highway by affirming a behavior that has no basis in biblical sociology, anthropology, or theology. He has been a one-man wrecking crew for the Anglican Communion.
That whole sense that meeting God would be less like coffee with a friend and more like getting electrocuted, that whole sense of God's holiness has largely evaporated.
In the preaching that you hear from your pastors, is your pastor's description of that righteous man, does it sound like Jesus or does it sound like your pastor?
Confessional Lutheran Deadheads, Love, Issues, etc.
There are places in the world that have, shall we call it, a history. We're not usually in tuned to this here in the West, especially the United States, where we started counting history the moment that we stepped on the shores of this land. And even then, we really don't start counting history until the formation of the United States. There are places in the world where it's undeniable the history goes back thousands of years, and a lot of that history has been changed back and forth, the lines on the map, many, many times. And the predominant religion wasn't always what it is today. The lands of the Crusades sounds kind of anachronistic, doesn't it? The lands of the Crusades are currently the lands of other wars, sometimes simply between Muslims who were participants in those Crusades. We often lay the Crusades at the doorsteps of Christianity, which in some way we deserve to, but the Muslims also had a hand in the Crusades. We're going to be talking here for the first few minutes of Issues, etc., about a castle in Syria that once held off a Muslim siege during one of the largest Crusades there was. Greetings and welcome to Issues, etc., live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 7th of May. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Matt Phillips of Concordia University, Nebraska will be our guest for the first half hour or so. Then we're going to be looking at the Old Testament man, Job. He's a prophet. He's many things, but he is way back in antiquity. He has a story that is very difficult to understand, often misunderstood, and his life has become symbolic of human suffering. Is it more than that in the book of Job, just a chronicle of suffering? We'll answer that question as the church prepares to remember Job. Dr. Susan Mobley will join us after that. We'll talk about education. And then Terry Mattingly, media coverage of the Supreme Court's ruling in favor of prayer at public meetings. How has the media covered the story? Have they gotten the issue and the court's thinking right in the coverage that they've done? Our call-in number for the next 2 hours of Issues, etc., 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. Matt Phillips is a regular guest. He joins us to talk about this castle in Syria that was once the center of one of the Crusades and held off a Muslim siege. Dr. Phillips is associate professor of history at Concordia University, Nebraska. Matt, welcome back.
It's good to be back.
We don't today associate these lands with Christian occupation, but rather with Muslim occupation. How long have the areas that we're going to be talking about here, mainly in modern-day Syria, how long have they been in the hands of the Muslim world?
Well, there would probably be two ways to look at that. I mean, obviously, it was part of the Roman Empire, which was Christianized, for lack of a better term, in the 4th century. And then I guess we'd say it was part of the Byzantine Empire, which was really the extension of the Roman Empire in the east. And then it was only in with the rise of Islam out of Arabia in the 7th century that the second generation of Muslim conquerors after Muhammad conquered that area, and it became part of the Muslim kingdom or empire, really, and remained that way. It wasn't until there were a lot of Christians, though, that remained in those areas. So Muslims did not necessarily force everyone to become a Christian, but, you know, you had to pay a tax and so forth. But there were a lot of Christians that remained in those areas. It was the first crusade in 1099, basically, came through there, and that area became part of what become known as the Crusader States in the 12th century.
Well, before we get into the details of this place's history and the castle that still stands there today in Syria, but once withstood this Muslim siege under Saladin, let's talk about the Crusades. Often, nowadays, the Crusades kind of are viewed as unilateral military endeavors on the part of Christendom, Western Europe, against kind of this kind of hapless and undeserving Muslim world. There were two sides. I mean, the Christendom is not without its fault here, but there were two sides to these wars that raged off and on over about six centuries, weren't there?
Yeah, definitely. I would say there was probably more than two, and I mean, to even make it even more complex. But as far as the, especially the first, second, third Crusades go, the first generation or so, maybe first 100 years of Crusade period, from the Christian point of view anyway, and the Western point of view, they were finally really responding to what was the grand spread of Islam from the 7th century on. I mean, a lot of people don't realize, they learn this in my class, they take it, that most of Spain and Portugal was controlled by Muslims from the 8th century, well, and part of it was still part of controlled by Muslim kingdoms until the 15th century. So this expansion was quite large. From the Muslim point of view, of course, and, you know, like you said, everybody, there's plenty of faults we could put Christians. It was an invasion from an outside force. But they were initially going to support the Byzantine Empire, which still had claim to those lands. That's why the First Crusade happened. What happens after the First Crusade? They establish what are generally called the Crusader States, which existed there along the area, part of what would be Lebanon, Israel, Palestine, maybe a little bit of Turkey, Syria, part of those little areas, and mostly in the 12th and 13th centuries. And the Croix de Chevalier was one of those in that area.
So in general, what were the Crusades? How would you describe them?
Well, yeah, that's how long do we have? Oh, well, we did a whole series on it, so if people want to go back and listen to those, they can. But I would say Crusades were holy wars because they were fought by the people who were fighting them. They were fought for the holy cause of defending Christians, but they were also fought with for the forgiveness of sins. And Lutherans, we know a lot about indulgences, but a lot about the idea of indulgences developed with Crusades. A crusader, part of being a crusader was receiving an indulgence and the remission of the remission of sins that went along with that. So it was a big part of the whole medieval pilgrimage movement also.
So they had a theological purpose as well as a political purpose.
Yes, a very deep theological purpose as well as a military strategic purpose. Yes, I would say yes, both and.
Where in the history of the Crusades do we find this particular location, the Croix de Chevaliers?
Right.
Where do we find that?
Yeah, the Croix de Chevalier, which is the name, was actually given by, like a lot of things, by 19th century historians. It just means the fortress of the knight in French. It was probably earlier called the Croix de l'Hospital, which is the fortress of the hospitalers, because it was actually a hospitaller castle. And I can say a little bit about who the hospitalers were if you want. They were one of the military orders that was very famous during the Crusade period. So they were a religious order that actually started as running a hospital in Jerusalem, and then they kind of morphed into a military order during the Crusade period. And they still have a organization. I mean, they're not military orders anymore, but it still is the Knights of St. John, as they're called today, descends from that group that still exists today.
And what exactly was a Crusader state?
That's a good question. They were essentially the states that were... Crusader is kind of a misnomer in a way, but they were the first crusaders who conquered those areas, the guys who survived, some of the upper-level noble guys, essentially. Some of them stayed there and made them into their own fiefdoms, and the main one was actually the Kingdom of Jerusalem, which would be roughly the same territory as Israel and Palestine today. And they kind of set up a kingdom there. They had the county of Tripoli, which would be similar to where Lebanon is today, and that's actually where the Croque de Chevrier was. And then they had, in the north, Edessa, and there's another one I'm forgetting off the top of my head right now, but there were four of them. Antioch was the other one, Antioch, Principality of Antioch. So those were the big four.
So these were essentially regions that were protected after the First Crusade.
Yeah, I mean, some people would say it was a form of colonialism, and you could argue that because there were people who came there and lived there that came from the West. But those people quickly amalgamated and integrated with the people there. There's actually a book by a person I was a good scholar named Chris McEverett, who wrote a book called Rough Tolerance, which is about the relationship between the Western Christians, the Eastern Christians, Greek speakers, Muslims in those areas during that time. So there was intermingling between them. But in the Crusader states, it was the descendants of they were called the Franks, which was kind of the name they gave to all the Westerners, whether they were French or German or English or whatever, were the dominant forces in those places, the King of Jerusalem, the Prince of this, the Prince of Antioch, the Count of Tripoli, etc. And they all had connections back to European kings, like the Kings of France and Kings of England and so forth.
So where in the various succession of crusades, or the things that we call crusades, because they're not always discrete campaigns.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Where does Saladin fit in? Who is he, and where does he fit into the history of the early crusades?
He's probably a guy that, if you're somewhat familiar with Robin Hood, your listeners might have, he's the guy that basically brings about the Third Crusade. He was actually an ethnic Kurd, but a Muslim. And he was able to unite Egypt with essentially Syria. And so he became the ruler of that area. And so he had the Crusaders surrounded, I guess, on three sides. And he, in the 1180s, he made it his goal to try to drive them out. I mean, he led a jihad against the Crusader states and was almost completely successful. He did not take the Croque de Chevrier, which was able to hold out. It was one of the places that was able to hold out against Saladin's army in 1187-88. And then the Third Crusade, and most people have heard of Richard the Lionheart, who was the most famous king of England who came. There were others, but he's the most well-known, fought Saladin's army and was able to at least win back some of the territory, and therefore the Crusader states continued on. And in fact, the Croque de Chevrier, that hospitaller castle that we're talking about, which was basically on the border of Syria and Lebanon today, remained a very important administrative and military fortification until later Muslims took over it in the 1270s.
Dr. Matt Phillips is our guest. He's associate professor of history at Concordia University, Nebraska. And we're talking a little bit about a castle in Syria that dates back to the time of the Crusades. Once held off a Muslim siege, as we've just heard, by the famous Muslim conqueror, Saladin. We'll get back to the story right after this.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The dangers inherent in particularly Lutheran Reformation Christians trying to be Baptists in their worship approach.
Craig Parton talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Just at the moment, a lot of people, Baptists and evangelicals included, are looking for more substance in their worship life. Many of them are looking to helpful liturgies and the hymns of the church to bring content to their services. Lutherans are throwing that stuff off the deck of the boat as fast as they can do it. So there'll be some comments, some discussion about why that's a dangerous avenue for Lutherans to take.
You can meet and hear Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals June 13th and 14th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Matt Phillips is our guest. We're talking about a castle in Syria. It recently made the news because it was damaged in the Syrian conflict. But this castle has stood the test of time, once holding off a Muslim siege during one of the ancient Christian crusades. Dr. Matt Phillips is associate professor of history at Concordia University, Nebraska. By the way, that's my alma mater. I went to school there, and Concordia University, Nebraska will be hosting the Institute on Liturgy, Preaching, and Church Music on July the 28th through the 31st. I will be one of the speakers there, along with a regular guest here on Issues Etc. that many love and know, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, talking about the conscience in worship. It's a great thing put together by another regular guest of Issues Etc., Pastor Will Whedon, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It's the 28th through the 31st in July, the Institute on Liturgy, Preaching, and Church Music. The title, Comfort, Comfort, Ye My People, that's this year's theme. For more information, click the Comfort, Comfort, Ye My People logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Matt, let's come back to the story of the Crusades here. So Saladin is essentially one of the guys who is attempting to retake the territories, or some of the territories, that had been retaken before by the Muslim Crusaders in the First and Second Crusades.
Right. So basically, he makes it his life goal as a ruler to drive the Christians back into the sea. And his biographer actually says, he says this great quote about how, not only am I going to drive these Christians out, then we're going to build boats and we're going to sail to where they came from and fight them there. He never did that, but it's kind of this great poetic image in his biography. And he's pictured as a very pious man, pious Muslim. He followed the five pillars, according to his biographer, he follows the five pillars of Islam. He used to have a guy walk around with him and read the Quran to him. And he'd say he'd just start weeping whenever he'd hear, So he's pictured as a very pious man, but he was also like a lot of men from that time on both sides, a ruthless warrior when he had to be. And he brought an army in and basically destroyed most of the Christian army in 1187. It looked like he was going to end all the Crusader states, but then the Third Crusade happened. Richard the Lionheart, as I said, was the main guy that came in there and was able to at least retain some of the Christian lands that would last another 100 years or so, approximately.
We talked about what the Christian interest in these lands were. These were lands of antiquity, or at least they understood them to be lands of antiquity for both the Old and the New Testament. There were sites
right
there that were pilgrimage sites that kind of,
yes,
what dovetails with pilgrimage slash crusade are hard to sometimes distinguish from one another. What was the Muslim interest in these areas?
Well, I mean, from their point of view, once an area had become part of the abode of Islam, it is the abode of Islam. I mean, this is kind of the base. I'm giving kind of a general overview of the Muslim view of the world. You have the abode of Islam and the abode that's outside Islam. And that area had been conquered. And, frankly, it had been ruled by Muslims for a really long time. From their point of view at the time, they saw it as these are outside invaders. They thought most Christians were polytheists. Both sides always didn't understand each other's theology, I guess you'd say. But so from their point of view, they were basically trying to drive out infidel, unbelievers I can't say the other word, unbelievers from the Muslim lands. And they also see Jerusalem as their own, the holy city of Jerusalem, where the Dome of the Rock is, which is the rock from which Muhammad was thought to have ascended into heaven in one of his revelatory events. So Jerusalem itself is a holy place for them. Of course, Jerusalem, for Christians, is the center of, you know, where Christ was crucified and rose from the dead. So it's still a place. I mean, there's still Christians go there all the time, still as a pilgrimage site today. So so there was a religious element on both sides, too.
What eventually became of Saladin and his forces?
Well, he and Richard kind of fought each other to a standstill. Richard and he make a truce. And so the Christians got back a certain amount of land. They didn't get back what they had before. So that he allows some of the Christians to go visit the Holy Sepulchre, the Tomb of Christ. Richard promises he's going to come back, and he never comes back because he ends up dying in Europe later. And Saladin actually died basically about a year or two after Richard left. And most people would say, you know, what if? If Richard had stayed or if they had brought another army back more quickly, you know, the Muslim forces were kind of thrown into disarray with Saladin's death. And so he died, I believe, of natural causes. I don't think he died in war. And then that there will be future crusades after that. But that was the last major war that was centered in the Kingdom of Jerusalem itself and in those Crusader states. The Fifth Crusade would be centered in Egypt, although there will be battles later in the area of Jerusalem and Syria and those areas too. Ultimately, Crusader states are driven out by other forces that emerge, including the Mongols from the east and other Islamic groups known as the Mamluks, who take over Egypt. And then drive north and drive out the Crusader states in the 13th century. And they're the ones that ultimately take the Croix de Chevalier in the 1270s and drive the Hospitallers out.
So in some form or another, we're talking about this area around this famous castle that has its famous history in the First, Second, Third Crusades. In some form or another, it's been occupied more or less by Islam since the time that it first held off that siege?
Well, no, I would say the Croix de Chevalier stayed intact for much of the 13th century. In fact, the first part of the 13th century, it was the most significant crusader spot. It wasn't until the 1270s, ultimately, that the Muslims take it. And then it remains a Muslim fortress, essentially, after that. And then later becomes part of the Ottoman Turkish Empire. And it'll be part of the Ottoman Turkish Empire until World War I. And then becomes it's in Syria today, and that's with the war going on right now. Obviously, it's still a big fortress and a good place to hide. So, you know, the worst thing about war is people die and bad things happen. But a less worse thing, a much less worse thing than human lives, is these kind of places might get damaged, and they have been in Syria. There's a lot of famous old things that have frankly been damaged by war. And you know, like I said, human life is a lot more important than old things, but On a lesser scale, we also should hope that these things are preserved too.
So, would you regard this as a perhaps a forgotten Christian site? This castle.
Well, not by scholars. It's probably one of the more well-known Crusader castles too, outside of even specialists, I would say. And there were there have been Orthodox Christians, Eastern and Arabic speaking Christians in Syria up to this day, but that site specifically was more of a fortress, and I'm not sure how long it's. It was very important strategic area. If you look at the geography of that area, going from the Syrian city of Homs to the port of Tripoli. There's kind of a valley to go through there. You can look it up, and anybody can look it up and look at it on Google now. But this is on top of a mountain, basically, that's very strategic in that area. So it could even be used for that today with artillery and so forth, I would guess. I don't know how it's been used in the war that's been going on lately. But, yeah, it's a great strategic point and was probably used that way for centuries, even after all the Christians were gone.
So finally then, Matt, In a general sense, what's the most important thing, if you could say to the kind of average listener out there who knows the term Crusades, who may have a very flimsy grasp on the real history here, what would you say the most important thing to know about the Crusades, in particular the ones we've been talking about? What would that be?
Well, that's a good question. I would say the most important thing to know about the Crusades is, from a theological perspective, I would say the thing that the Crusades got wrong specifically was that, one, that we earn our salvation by doing some fancy good work for God. So that would be a good thing to realize the mistake. Two, that using war as an instrument of policy, whether it's a religious policy or mixed with a religious policy, isn't always a good thing. But on the other hand, sometimes when innocent people are attacked, the legitimate authorities in some cases have the right to try to defend those people. The sticky wicket, of course, in any situation is always, when are those times, right? So it's a complicated history that should not be glossed over either way. And often it is done that way, and that's a shame.
Dr. Matt Phillips is Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Nebraska. Matt, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being our guest.
All right, I hope to see you in July, maybe.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking with Dr. Andrew Steinman. Job is he's kind of a simple figure. We're not told a lot about the man, except that he was doing very well, then doing very poorly, and then restored. But is his story in the Old Testament more than just an emblem of human suffering? Is there more to Job than just that? We'll remember, along with the church, Job from the Old Testament, Dr. Andrew Steinman, right after this. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Gloria Christi Lutheran, Greeley, Colorado. St. John's Lutheran, Rosemount, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Waltham, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri. Zion Lutheran, Gravelton, Missouri. Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana. Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee. And Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Carpet, hardwood, tile, stone, laminate, you name it, they've got it at Vallo Floor Coverings in Edwardsville. Vallo's offers competitive pricing, a knowledgeable sales staff to help you with product selection, and name brands like Shaw, Congoleum, Mohawk, Florida Tile, and more. Vallo Floor Coverings, 1009 Plummer Drive in Edwardsville, 618-656-7788 or vallofloor.com.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Whether vacationing in Branson or boating on Table Rock Lake, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Kimberling City, Missouri is your Christ-confessing congregation. Every week, Christ comes to us through the preached word and sacraments, by which we are strengthened and kept in the one true faith. So come to where Christ comes to you. Come to Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, 103 Kimberling Boulevard in Kimberling City, Missouri. For more, see our website at sothl.com.
What happens when our theology is driven by freshness instead of faithfulness? I've written an article for the latest issues, etc. journal titled New Thing Theology. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details how Bob Leko journeyed from the Word Faith movement to faith in Christ alone. The free online Issues, etc. journal.